Hey, and welcome to FutureThinkers.org, a podcast about the evolution of technology, society, and consciousness. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yuvia Ivanova. If you're new to the show and you want to get a list of our favorite books, popular episodes, and to join our community, go to FutureThinkers.org/start. All Future Thinkers episodes are now on video. To watch the premiere of each episode and join the discussion live, subscribe to our YouTube channel at FutureThinkers.org/YouTube. Hey, so today we want to talk about the epidemic of depression in the Western world and what causes it and how it can be solved. So one of the ideas that was talked about in the book Sapiens, as well as in Sex at Dawn and in a lot of TED Talks that we've watched recently, is that humans for 99% of our history were hunter-gatherers, so we evolved to be adapted to a very different kind of lifestyle. And now that we're living the lifestyle of being indoors, in front of a computer a lot, not socializing a whole lot, not exercising, eating processed foods, it's not in line with our nature. And so it's no wonder that we're all depressed. Even though we live in the most peaceful, the most prosperous time in human history, and everything seems to be amazing. So why is everybody miserable? So obviously, we can't go back to exactly the way that our ancestors lived because our societies are not structured that way, but there's a lot of stuff that we could learn from our ancestors, and so that's what we wanted to talk about today. Mm-hmm. So what are some of your own lessons from this? What are some of the things that you've done in your life that have really helped you?
Well, so I went through a bunch of stuff in the span of about 3 months where just everything that could possibly go wrong went wrong. I got out of a long-term relationship. I was let go of my job. I got a phone call from two separate people getting into car accidents, and I had to go back for a funeral in the same weekend. I was failing in college. There are just a number of things. I was having a lot of financial troubles. Did I mention the eviction? Yeah, there was the eviction. So it was like one thing after another. And at some point it got comical. Like I would just be laughing about it because it's like, of course this would happen. Of course there would be another thing that would make this all go wrong. And I didn't really know how to deal with it very well. Like I didn't have the tools that I do now. And I had a lot of kind of grasping attachments to the different things that I didn't want to change, you know, the relationship leaving or any of that kind of stuff. And so I basically went into a big depressive spiral that was really difficult to get out of. And one of the things I did was, because everything was going so wrong, I stopped having the ability to avoid anything anymore. Like I had to look at everything in the face because there was nowhere else I could turn. There was nothing else I could spend my time on to distract. There was just like everything was going wrong at once, and I had to look at everything very deeply. And what ended up happening was that I kind of went through it and came out the other side. Like I felt like I had lost everything and was able to just, you know, hit rock bottom and then look up at all the possibilities ahead of me. I'd also come across this book called The Power of Now, by Eckhart Tolle, which really helped during this transition. And what that book said in essence was to focus on the current moment and not be projecting yourself into the future of how things are going to be worse or ruminate on how things were better in the past or how you fucked up and, you know, could have made a better choice in the past. It's just like, what are your problems right now? Are you in pain? Are you comfortable? Are you hungry? Are you, you know, just be in the body. And that's something that made a huge difference. And I still do that today. If anything goes wrong in any kind of looming thing that's ahead of me, some terrible thing I want to avoid that could happen, I just return to the present moment as much as possible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's a really good piece of advice. And meditation does a similar thing. I mean, Eckhart Tolle, of course, talks about meditation as well. And but what about people who haven't necessarily gone through a terrible thing recently, but they find themselves in a depressed state? And I think that there's actually quite a bit of research that shows what people can do when they're in the state. And it seems that it's not that there's anything wrong with people. It's not their fault. Like, they're not sick. They're not doing anything that is causing this depression specifically. It's the environment that they're in. But the beautiful thing about that is that we can change our environment. And so there's a TED Talk that we watched by a depression researcher, and he talks about the studies that he's done with his team and the findings from these studies. And it's pretty interesting because the things that they found are not difficult or expensive to change for a lot of people. And so the number one thing they found to have a positive effect on depression is exercise. And it doesn't have to be at the gym. In fact, he said that exercising at the gym is not natural for people because we were evolved to be outside and kind of walk around and socialize as we do activities. So he said, go for a walk with a friend 3 times a week for 30 minutes at a brisk pace, like you're late for the bus. And that's enough to lift your mood. Then another thing they found is spending time outside, which can be combined with this. Another thing is socializing, which again can be combined. Another thing was omega-3 fatty acids, so supplements or, you know, in fish or whatever. And then there were two more things. Get good quality of sleep.
Yeah, right.
That was a really big one as well. Go to sleep at the same time every night and wake up at the same time every morning.
Yeah.
And don't use screens right before going to sleep or waking up. And then stop ruminating thoughts, which again, meditation helps with.
For me, one thing I've focused a lot on is thought control. Mm. So how do I have discipline when it comes to what I'm thinking about, what I'm focusing on? And for me, you know, you can, anyone really can get those spiraling thoughts where one thought kind of sponsors the next thought, and each of them is worse than the last. And it's like this cascade of things that can happen and make your life just a living hell. And you can do it the other way around too, where one thing begets another thing that, you know, you want to happen, a positive thing, and it can create an upward spiral. But knowing that you can choose either way and that you have sovereignty and you have choice in this matter, like, that to me is one of the keys of unlocking your ability to pull out of that downward spiral. Because in most cases when people are feeling terrible, it's because of some external event that has either taken away their options or caused them some sort of pain, and they've focused on that external event or that person or whatever it is and kind of pointed the finger at that and blamed it. And what that does is make all of the responsibility, the external event or person, and all the ability to remedy the situation external as well. And so if you can kind of look, and this is why I think looking straight at things is so important, is if you can find where you are at, where you were responsible in some way for what happened to you, and you can figure out like how you could not do it in the future, or how you can kind of get control over the situation now, then I think you get a lot more sovereignty and a feeling of empowerment, and then you can move forward and take steps to change things. But if you don't have empowerment, you're done.
Yeah. And I think a big part of the problem is that a lot of the time people look at the news and see these horrible, heartbreaking events that are happening somewhere else in the world that they have no control over. And a lot of the time, not a lot of the time, but sometimes the news will blame people. Mm-hmm. You eat meat, you overconsume, you drive your car and emit greenhouse gases. And so people feel horrible about themselves. They feel responsible, but, you know, these actions are so essential to their lives that it's very difficult to change. And even if they stop eating meat, there's a million other things that are causing global warming, and global warming hasn't stopped. So people feel very helpless. And here in this case, I think the best course of action is to just reduce your consumption of news. Because if you think about it, the news networks are not actually broadcasting news. they're broadcasting stories that will get the most attention, the most clicks, the most engagement. And we are wired to respond to things that are threats. We take the most action and react the most strongly to threats because that's what kept our ancestors alive. And so that's what news companies use. So they'll take some incident somewhere in the world that has nothing to do with you and blow it out of proportion a lot of the time and make it seem like the worst thing ever and then feed it to you, make you feel terrible, and you just eat it up. Yeah. So
I think another issue is that, and relates to what you were talking about, is people think that it's their responsibility to change the world before they've got their own life in order. Mm-hmm. That's a huge, huge thing. In Jordan Peterson's book, 12 Rules for Life, that there's a whole chapter on this called Clean Your Room. And basically he's talking to young people and their sort of tendency to focus on the rest of the world, how the world needs to change before they've gotten themselves into a position where they have control and sovereignty in their own life and their house is in order, their life is in order, and they can actually have some experience to offer in a way of changing the world. I think that's a huge point. I mean, there's only so much you can do as an individual, and you need to be able to have the clarity of focus by focusing on one task in order to make a difference in that, the achieving of that task. So I think, too much clutter and too much external focus before your own life is sorted out is the wrong way to go.
Yeah. And even if it's not negative news, social media is designed to be addictive. I mean, some of the smartest social scientists in the world and programmers in the world work for those companies, and their task is to make it as addictive as possible. So, you know, you can muster up all of your willpower and say, I'm going to use social media responsibly, but realistically, there are many, many forces working against that. So the responsible thing to do, I think, is probably to reduce social media use or to stop using certain sites entirely.
Do you ever feel like there is an issue with ignoring the truth and ignoring what, you know, I think I hear a lot from people who are depressed that they can't look away from what's going wrong in the world because they need to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And if they look away, it's just them ignoring the problem or sweeping it under the rug.
Yeah.
So how do you respond to that kind of attitude? Like,
well, I'm unfortunately in that camp myself. So I look out at the world, I see the problems, and I want to help and I want to solve them. But I can't.
But because there's such a huge, the problem is so big and so complex, you feel helpless, right?
Yeah. Or I'm not an expert in the area and I just wouldn't know what to do. I mean, my suggestion would be as good as some, you know, Joe Blow on the street. So in that case, sometimes I definitely don't follow my advice all the time, but sometimes I just remind myself that as much as I would like to help, I can't for various reasons. And that doesn't make me a bad person. It just means that this is not within my sphere of sovereignty. This is not within my sphere of influence.
I think a lot of people take it upon themselves. This is just going back to my original point about take it upon themselves to fix the world's problems before they fix their own problems without realizing how their own individual problems are connected, because they're a single unit, a copy of billions of other units. Other people live in very similar ways, and it takes one person to behave differently and for that to spread to the next person naturally. And if you find it very difficult to change your behavior in a way that's compatible with a better world, or a world that's not as wasteful and kind of closes the loops, then maybe the way that our whole entire structure is set up is not, it's not possible to fit into what your ideal version of a lifestyle should be.
Yeah. And I would say that very specific diets or, you know, very extreme kind of measures. I had a friend a while ago who tried to boycott plastic And after a couple of weeks, she became extremely frustrated and couldn't do it anymore because it's just not possible. So yeah, some of these kinds of solutions, I mean, they sound great in an ideal world, but if they can't be applied in practice by even the most diligent people, then it's not realistic that the world would adapt it.
And then also becoming more worried about that thing because you're failing at it makes you unable to be effective in the ways that you can actually have an impact on.
Exactly.
That's probably one of the worst things about depression, is it makes you ineffective on all areas of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think a little bit of selfishness, a little bit of like focusing on fixing your own life first is probably the best advice. And then read books like Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. It's an exceptional book.
Mm-hmm.
What other kind of resources can we leave? Power of Now.
Yeah, we'll leave a couple links to TED Talks or videos that tackle this from a couple different perspectives and offer solutions. And you'll notice that a lot of them overlap these kind of simple behavior changes, not radical, like stop eating meat forever, more like, you know, go to bed at the same time, wake up at the same time, don't consume social media before bedtime or in the morning when you first wake up, because that's when your mental state is most malleable and most affected by the addictive or negative things that are coming at you from your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Socialize with friends in person, in real life, not just over internet.
Yeah.
Go outside, go for walks, spend time in nature, exercise. You know, very simple advice, right? So why is it so difficult for people to follow it? Why do you think it's so difficult?
I don't really know. I mean, you get out of the habit and then you kind of like, it's like that fall off the wagon thing. You just feel like, oh, this is not going to work. I'm a piece of shit. I can't make this thing a habit. And then you just give up. Like if you miss a couple days at the gym, that turns into more days, turns into weeks, turns into months. If you eat the wrong kind of food outside of a diet you're trying out, then the whole diet spirals. So I think just recognizing when you failed and trying to get back to it, that's probably the most difficult thing for me, is like once I've broken a habit, then it's really difficult for me to get back into it, but I just have to keep trying.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just will. The other thing too I find to be really helpful is to remove decisions from your day-to-day activities. Like try and reduce the amount of decisions that either don't matter or could be automated in some way. What am I having for dinner? I mean, you and I just started cooking our meals for the entire week ahead of us.
Yeah.
So we put everything in Tupperware and freeze it or throw it in the fridge. And then we only cook once a week. And that wipes off the question of what do you want to have for dinner or what do you want to have for lunch? It's just, if you can remove decisions that don't really amount to much or don't really matter and have more things be automated, then you actually are, I believe, saving your will and intention for things that matter more.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a big one.
Or gym, where it's at the same time on the same day every week, and we have a alarm going off on the phone that says, okay, time to go to the gym, and it's scheduled, and
yeah,
you don't have to think about it.
Yeah, yeah. We have a routine, so you know, our alarm goes off at 8, goes again at 8:30, goes again at 9. So there's like little things that have to happen by the time that the next alarm goes off. You know, 9:30, cab has to be called.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 8:30, the oatmeal has to be on the stove. The coffee has to be brewing. Yeah. Yeah.
And I find that works. Like our morning routine now, because since we started having a morning routine, is like the best part of the day and it sets you off. Oh, another one, journaling. That's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing this style of journaling, both of us have, for a couple of years now. And it's been off and on. Like sometimes we won't do it. The times that we do it, it's like, it's amazing how effective it is. And I'll just go over it quickly. Actually, maybe I can just share a screenshot of what it looks like. But sure. I'll talk about it and share a screenshot. So there are, the first things you do are focus on what you're grateful for.
Gratitude.
Morning gratitude. So, and it can't, you got to put some thought into it. It can't be the same thing every day. It can't just be like, you know, sunshine or something. It could be, but you have to really think about it and feel the gratitude.
Feel it.
Next, so there you do three of those. And the next one is, what would make today great? What kind of event or what kind of thing could you do? What kind of action could you take that would make today a great day? For me, it's often just related to the to-do list that I have. So if I finish this, this, and this, I'm going to feel great about myself. If some event happens that, you know, if I go hang out with friends, that'll feel really good. That'd make today great. Gut, that's another one I added. So what is my gut telling me I should either be doing or not be doing about in my life, like about this day? So if you got some sort, like for me, it's always in the gut. If I feel nervous about something, if I feel like some kind of ominous event is coming up in the near future, then I'll get this feeling in my stomach. And that generally to me, I'm taking that as a sign that I have to do something about it. It's a warning sign. So, and it ends up being always right. The most important thing I could possibly do or stop doing is whatever, you know, I feel there. And I don't always put three things there. Sometimes it's just my gut is just fine. There's nothing wrong. And I just move on. Next thing is targets. So 3-4 maximum. What are the targets for the day that I want to achieve? And then 5 is lessons. So, or the next one is lessons. So what did, this comes at the end of the day. What did I learn from today? What was an important thing? And it can just be a 1 or 2 sentence thing. What did I learn? Next is wins. You write down 3 wins. So good things that happened, things you achieved, things you learned. And then the last one is the evening gratitude. And that's 3 more things. What are you grateful for?
Mm-hmm.
And that journal, just the habit of doing that every morning, both sets your mood at a high level, sets your intention on what you want to achieve, and also makes you grateful for what you have. And just kind of locks you into a path for the day. And it's also about taking away that decision-making thing again. So you've already got your 3 targets there. You don't have to decide later on in the day what you're going to do. You just have to get those targets done. And then if you get them done, you can feel great. And then you can go, you know, reward yourself.
Yeah.
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 Affirmations, that's another one that I didn't include there. But I saved the second page just to write down like what I want, an affirmation of the kind of lifestyle I want or a goal I want or whatever. So I just write that down as well every day to remind myself of what I want.
Yeah, we've been listening to this track actually, or a couple different tracks of affirmations that run while you sleep.
Yeah.
So that's been pretty good actually. I've enjoyed those.
Yeah. Yeah, you wake up feeling, because if you're listening to this stuff, any kind of like evening affirmation meditation on YouTube, some of these things go for like 7 hours or more. But I find they're very relaxing. You can put the volume down quite low. There's usually some sort of meditative music behind it or sound effects like forest sounds or rain or whatever. And then you wake up in the morning with that kind of stuff rattling around in your mind. And I just generally feel better. Like I have those words kind of repeating in my head of, mm-hmm. you know, programming my own mind, which reminds me of another book, Programming a Subconscious Mind. Really good book.
Yeah. By whom?
I forget. Yeah, it's all about sending cues and commands to the subconscious mind, which is, I would argue, far more powerful than the conscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And asking your mind to work on tasks for you, work on goals for you while you're sleeping or while you're not thinking about them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, I find that it's really, really helpful to reconnect with my nature, because I definitely get in my head quite a lot and I start thinking about something or trying to deconstruct some idea, or I'm thinking about what we want to talk about in the next podcast episode, and I go just off into my own space. And I kind of forget that my body feels uncomfortable, or I need to exercise or I need to eat. And then I start getting really grumpy and I wonder why I am that way. And then
you will say it's something else too. Like you won't identify the correct thing that's causing you discomfort.
Yeah.
That's another thing, is you got to be so accurate. You got to figure out how to be accurate with what is causing you the pain and discomfort. Because if you're not, you're going to start fixing things that don't need fixing, and you end up fucking up more things than we're even wrong before. you just go like destroying your life because you're trying to fix things from a state of not feeling good anyway. And then you end up just like knocking things off that were holding you up. Yeah.
Yeah. Or you start like picking apart and questioning the plan that you made the month before or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll leave all the right resources and stuff at the end of this episode so you guys can check it out. Hope you enjoyed. See you in the next episode. This episode is brought to you by Qualia, a nootropic supplement that helps support mental performance and mood. To get 10% off, use the code FUTURE at checkout. And to learn more about neurohacking, visit futurethinkers.org/neuro.
Thanks for tuning in to Future Thinkers. For all the books, resources, and mentions from this episode, go to futurethinkers.org/72. Don't forget to subscribe and hit the bell icon to get notified of new videos. You can also follow us on social media to stay connected. If you'd like to get a t-shirt like the new Make America Think Again, go to futurethinkers.org/store. If you like what we do and you want to help us make more podcasts and videos, consider donating or becoming a patron at futurethinkers.org/support. Also visit our sponsor Qualia and use the coupon code FUTURE to get 10% off your purchase.